Today, I have an interview with David Harriman, who is the author of The Logical Leap, an excellent book on the inductive method in physical science. He and his co-founder, Tom Van Dam, have founded what they call Falling Apple Science Institute. Falling Apple being obviously a reference to Newton. It is a nonprofit organization that is developing an inductive science curriculum for middle schools and high schools. I think it's a very important project, and I wanted you to hear about it. So thank you, Dave, for coming today, and let me ask you some questions about it. First, you spent more than a dozen years writing and lecturing about the philosophy of science to adults. So why did you begin writing a science curriculum for teenagers?
Well, while working with you on The Logical Leap, I learned a lot about the method that scientists use to discover laws in nature. And I realized there's no essential difference between the way a scientist discovers a law and the way a student learns the law. With the aid of hindsight, of course, we can make it easier for the student. But if the student is really learning the material and not just memorizing it, then he has to go through the same essential steps of reasoning from the evidence. Otherwise, he's just accepting conclusions on the authority of scientists and teachers. And I decided to declare war against authority. I mean, teenagers often do this. The trouble with teenagers is not that they rebel against authority. The trouble is that they usually don't know any alternative. So when they reject one authority, they end up replacing it with another one.
Why do you think they can't think independently?
Well, I don't think they ever really learn the method of doing that, and they never develop confidence in their ability to do it. And I think in order to get that confidence, they need to learn about this inductive method of thinking. That's the logical process of going from particular facts to a general truth. I want to teach young people how that's done in natural science. And hopefully, they'll automatize the method and apply it to every field they think about.
So you became interested then in teaching induction. I understand that, but why specifically teenagers rather than adults?
Well, I do think a lot of adults will be interested in the Falling Apple science books. In fact, we've already had feedback from a few older people about our astronomy books, and they told us that for the first time in their lives, they really enjoyed looking up in the sky because they could understand what they were seeing. And, I mean, I think that's great. But I also think there's a special reward to teaching young people who are in their formative years. An individual's basic method of thinking develops early. An adult may change his views, but it's rare that his method of thinking improves significantly. And I care more about whether a person is a real thinker and less about whether they agree with me on some particular issue. If we're both using the right method and we disagree about some subject, well, we can probably resolve that. But we can't resolve it if one of us has dogmatically accepted key ideas on the basis of authority. And my teaching experience has convinced me that young people are much more open to getting the whole message, not just the content of a particular course, but also the method behind it.
I want to ask one question here that just occurred to me. I'm just curious to know, I'm not sure I know the answer. Let's suppose that you were really successful and you got your curriculum widespread in colleges and science were taught rationally. But at the same time, everything else remained as it was, literature and history, etc., all given the wrong motivation. What do you think would happen? You would be ignored or you would overcome them or what?
I think learning science by this method has a tremendous impact on a person's thinking method. And so I actually think a person that learns science by this method it's bound to carry over into the other fields. So for example, it's inconceivable to me that somebody that went through our entire curriculum in science and learned to think that way would accept the kind of arguments that we hear from politicians today.
Do you think that you would be considered controversial In a regular school? I mean, by the faculty?
Well, I think that... You mean our science classes?
Yes, your science classes.
Yeah. Yes, they are different, obviously, than the way the subject is taught. What we're trying to do in the marketing, though, is tell people... We're not going into schools and saying, we're trying to reform your whole epistemology. We're going in instead and saying, look, this is really important material, and we have a new way that makes it easier to teach and more fun to learn. And that doesn't sound controversial to them. And the teachers, some teachers will actually respond very positively to that, I think.
I think it's an excellent approach. What are science classes doing today if they aren't teaching, you know, your method? They're not teaching how scientific laws were actually discovered.
Well, I mean, basically what they do is they give students the laws, and they don't do much to convey how those laws are known. For example, in astronomy, the kids are typically told the heliocentric theory in first or second grade.
Sun is the center.
Yeah, the sun is the center. The planets go around. They have a plastic model in their classroom where they can see, they memorize the names of the planets, the little balls that go around the big ball, and then they supposedly understand the solar system. Well, in contrast to that, at Falling Apple, we teach the students a lot about basic observational astronomy so that they can identify and understand what they see in the sky. When they eventually get to the heliocentric theory, they grasp how that theory integrates and explains an enormous range of observations. They even see how the theory necessarily follows from the observations. They get the whole reasoning process that goes from observations to the final theory.
Well, what would you say, obviously, I think what you're saying is crucial, but there's teachers or parents out there I know who are going to say, well, what difference does it make? When they're taught the traditional way, they learn the correct theory of the solar system. And when they're taught your way, they learn the same theory. So they both end up the same way. The only problem is your way takes longer. So why bother about it? Why shouldn't we just tell them the truth right at the outset?
Well, my answer is the difference is that our students actually learn the theory, and the students taught by the traditional method don't. For our students, the theory stands in their minds as a summary and explanation of the observations which necessitated the theory. On the other hand, imagine a student that is taught in the traditional way. Why does he accept the theory? Well, in effect, he accepts it because the old non-argument, because I told you so. I mean, he's accepting it on the authority of the adults. These students can't identify much of what they see in the sky, and they certainly can't relate those observations to the theory. So they accept the theory, but it doesn't stand as real knowledge. They accept it with a shrug that says, well, okay, if you say so, just tell me what to memorize for the test. And at Falling Apple, we don't really regard that as education.
Well, it sure as hell is not education. I agree with you that telling them to just memorize the theory is a disaster. But now, I guess at least in astronomy, if you're going to base it on observation, judging by the number of stars I can see, there's a countless number of observed facts, and you want them to see and retain those in order to show how the theory explains them. How can they retain this seemingly limitless number?
Yeah, that is the tricky part. Somehow, prior to introducing theory, we have to find a way to integrate all those observations into a whole that's easy to remember, and that way the students can think about them. And, I mean, astronomy is a great example here. As you pointed out, the sun, the moon, each planet, the stars, they all move differently. There are a couple of hundred bright stars, and it's very easy to get overwhelmed by the complexity of it all, which is exactly why most educated adults don't know much about it. If we just presented all those separate facts without tying them together in some simple way, that would be a disaster.
So how have you solved the problem?
Well, the way that we've done it is we teach the observable facts in the right order, and then every new fact that we introduce, we relate it to the facts the student already knows. And so we found that in this way, even the observations can be continually tied together in a way that makes it easy to remember and think about it. Now, in astronomy, this was a huge challenge, and I had an enormous amount of help. Tom Van Dam, my co-founder at Falling Apple, is absolutely brilliant at inventing teaching devices that do exactly this, that tie all these observations together in a way that tremendously simplifies the material. For example, he invented a special device called the Sun Puppet that simplifies the motion of celestial bodies across the sky by presenting it in a two-dimensional clock face and relating all the movements to the sun. And then later, when we want to expand and talk about the whole celestial sphere, we introduce another of Tom's devices called the Horizon Globe. And this is a globe where the student can actually turn it and see the path of any celestial body across the sky as it is observed from any location on Earth. The variations in the paths of celestial bodies are complicated enough, so just describing them to the students doesn't really work very well. The students need to actually turn an apparatus and see exactly how the observed paths change with season and with latitude. And then we found it becomes unforgettable to them.
But still, some memorization you can't get away from. Like you said, there are, 200 bright stars. Well, don't they have to memorize that?
Well, yes, but if you integrate the presentation right, you can make it very easy. For instance, we don't just give them a list of hundreds of stars to memorize. We start by giving them a list of only 4 easily recognized constellations, which we call the guidepost constellations. Each guidepost constellation is in a particular quadrant in the sky. And then we make up a memorable story that relates other nearby constellations to that guidepost. So with this method, the student learns a total of about 20 constellations that are split into 4 groups. And those constellations contain the huge majority of bright stars that can actually be seen from the continental United States. So it really is that simple. Now, in the past, nobody's ever tried to figure out how to make it simple. Other books just say that there are 88 constellations, and then they start plowing through them one after another. But we focus on the constellations that have the bright stars, and we tie them together with an entertaining story, which makes learning the stars fun and easy.
So without telling us the story, because there's not a lot of time, what would be an idea of a story that would link one constellation to the other?
For instance,
in a sentence, like, one is in love with the other?
Okay. For instance, one of the most famous constellations in the sky is Orion. Well, we have a story with Orion's hunting party, and he has a dog, and he has a couple of twins that are playing with the dog in his hunting party, and it just ties together a lot of the most important constellations in that whole section of the sky.
Okay, and I'm sure you have equivalents for the others. Now, you're working on astronomy right now, but your goal is way beyond that. You want to develop an entire science curriculum, am I right, from grade 7 on through high school? Middle school and high school.
Yeah, 6 yeah. through 12.
Yeah, 6 through 12. So you started with astronomy because?
Well, historically, astronomy was the science that led to the scientific revolution. And it's an underappreciated science today. And it led to the modern scientific age, so that's where we start.
And then you'll pick up from there and go on, right?
Yeah, physics, chemistry, biology. There's a lot of work to do.
Well, you got really ambitious plans. What do you need to achieve?
Well, the basic requirement is time. And, of course, time costs money. We're a tax-deductible nonprofit that needs donors who see the value of the project and will support us until we can get to that next stage and start getting grants from education foundations. And I think we're very close to that stage now. Within a year, I think we're going to be in a position where we have enough products, we're into enough schools.
So let me just ask you, so Is it fair to say that this whole interview is really a pitch?
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay. Well, go ahead and make it in the last paragraph.
Okay. Well, we would love to hear from anyone who has a good contact at a middle school and will give us a recommendation. That way, we can get our foot in the door and arrange to present our astronomy course. And every school we get into is a boost and helps us raise money for the development of further units. So I hope that people out there that are interested in this can supply either financial supports or school contacts.
Well, I want to say in conclusion, thank you, Dave, for appearing. Dave Harriman is the only good physicist and philosopher of physics that I have ever met. So if this interest, this falling apple interests you, I strongly recommend that you help him out and give him the support he needs.
All right. Well, thank you for having me on the program.
Thank you.